This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
The debt bomb is out there.
Government does its part by being good stewards of taxpayer dollars. So we've cut $1 trillion out of federal spending.
We're going to tax sunshine pretty soon.
He always seems to be taking whacks at businesses and their achievement. And at the same time, he always wants to spend more money on these transfer payments.
Hope and change has now become attack and blame.
The other side has decided that compromise is a dirty word.
We'll unshackle our economy.
The last time these guys unshackled the economy, to use their term, they put the middle class in shackles.
Wild and reckless accusations that disgrace the office of the presidency.
I want to really unlock the forces of entrepreneurship in this country. I think they've been stifled in recent years.
He's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street.
Chains you can believe in.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Up on deck in the first hour, Tom McClellan, originator of the McClellan Oscillator, will be our technician this week. He'll be joining me in the first hour. Rob Bernard on vacation, so I'll be sitting in on the fixed income report. And, of course, Ryan Poplava will be joining us in the first hour to talk about what happened in the markets this week and talk about, well, another great week for stocks. At least they're going up. So that's got to be good news for investors. So we'll be talking about that in the first hour. We'll also be talking to FSN foreign correspondent, continuing the theme from last week, a new Cold War brewing between the U.S. and China. That's Eric Townsend. He'll be joining us in the third hour.
And we had on this week on our premium series, David Walker, former Comptroller General of the United States under both Presidents Clinton and Bush number two. He's embarked on a new tour called 10 million per minute. That's how fast we're going into debt. You know, there are some plans out there, whether you talk about the Simpson-Bowles plan or the Ryan plan, whichever it happens to be. But right now, Congress and the White House still haven't figured out that they need to embrace something in order to prevent this train wreck from happening. And you know, surprisingly enough, some of the initial changes wouldn't be that rough. But everybody's out to make political hay during this election season. And so, well, the question is, will we or won't we? Will we train wreck or not? Or are they going to try to break it before that happens? Then we'll talk about Fast and Furious. No, we're not talking about an operation running south of the border as far as running weapons into Mexico. We're talking what may be good news for President Obama, because it looks like the stock market may do some interesting things before the election in November. And, you know, we've talked about dividend investing. Well, what do? Do you abandon dividends and go into high beta type stocks? We'll find out. Then we'll have Jim on the record. We do this once a month where we look at a series of emails that have come into us. We sort of summarize emails that are similar and then try to answer those questions from listeners. And finally, lifetime income. This week, we'll look at the real life story of two people we'll call Gary and Kathy. When do you plan to retire? How do you trigger the retirement? When do you say, this is it? We're going to do that. Or what happens if you're outed? I mean, out of your job because somebody lays you off because there are downsizing or relocations of your business. How does that affect your plan and how do you adjust? That's one of those things that comes flying at you that you can't always anticipate, but you do need to deal with it. All of that today on The Big Picture, along with your calls on the Q lines.
But before we do that, let's talk to Ryan Poplava next and find out what moved the markets this week. I'm just looking at some numbers. The S&P 500 up almost 0.75%. We're talking about the Dow up 8% for the year. Not a bad year. Well, the markets are holding up.
Well, Ryan, last week we discussed a slow news week in the market, but there was a noticeable rotation out of defensive positions into more economically sensitive areas. Did you see any trend which carried forward into this week?
Well, this week was about as quiet as last week, so that's about the same as far as any driving news, except for some comments from Angela Merkel explicitly supporting the ECB's current, if they ask for it, we will come, sort of mission statement. I do think the rotation message last week carried into this week, to answer your question, but I think it was more prevalent in fixed income, in bonds, specifically for the U.S., German, and French bonds. We saw yields rise there for all three as money continues to leave those safe havens and into more riskier areas. Now, as far as equities, we saw more movement in consumer discretionary and technology stocks this week based around really earnings and some consumer economic reports. Specifically, retail sales were up 0.8% in July following June's 0.8% decline. Despite the slow April, May, and June months in retail, we got some good earnings reports from The Gap, Ann Taylor, Home Depot, and TJX companies this week that seemed to reaffirm the economic reports. You know, many of the retail companies highlighted more traffic, better same-store sales, and huge online growth numbers. Actually, speaking of internet sales, the U.S. Census Bureau released a quarterly report this Thursday, and it showed the 14th straight quarterly increase in internet sales since the 2008 decline, with purchases up 3.3% in the quarter and about 15.3% from a year ago. Now, if you have the brand name, the fashions people want, and a portal people can navigate to buy your goods, you're doing all right as we continue to see a secular bull market in online retailing. I know because I see it on my monthly statement, and when I check it every month to see what the stay-at-home wife's been up to.
Yeah, with a household as large as ours here, something's walking to the front door. You always have this giddy reaction when something comes like that.
You know, speaking of that, you know, we get Amazon packages at the office daily. Jim actually reads the books of most of his authors before he interviews them. Interesting thought from, you know, a lot of those guys out there that don't do that. He's an avid movie watcher as well, so we get to see his excitement when a new movie gets mailed to him. He's like a boy on Christmas Day when those packages come in. You can see it, the excitement written on his face, wondering what movie or book is inside. My favorite part is when he gets multiple copies because we can bum a free copy. You know how Amazon has the single click option? We don't call Jim Mr. Double Click for nothing. Well, you know, again, tying this into finance, products purchased online have to get to you by airplane, truck, or rail. So growth in online retail is bullish for our transportation system. It's also bullish for paper. You know, we tend to wrap our goods in a generous amount of paper.
Yeah, no, there's a lot that happens after you go to your cart, check out, and click buy that you don't really think about, like energy that's entailed and all of the mechanics that have to happen to do it. This, by the way, is what's driving a lot of states nuts, so because people are supposed to be paying use tax on that when it comes in, and they aren't doing that. Anyway, did anything else happen in the markets besides some positive consumer data and earnings?
Well, I guess the other story out there that's been developing is that a stronger outlook for the U.S. economy is clouding the possibility of more QE. And at the very least, the Jackson Hole speech by Bernanke at the end of the month will likely be less dovish than previously expected. As you said, John, we seem to be strung along by Fed speak since the beginning of the year concerning quantitative easing. Now, this seems to still be the case. Analysts are looking at stronger jobs data and the July retail sales surprise on Tuesday as a basis for the Fed to hold on any easing talk. But that hasn't stopped the Fed governors from both the dovish and the hawkish camp from, you know, really voicing their opinion. This week, we had a few Fed presidents chime in, many of them non-voting members of the committee, so they don't actually get to vote one way or the other, but they certainly let us know how they feel about it. But, you know, despite the better-than-expected economic data, as seen in the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index, which we follow a lot and so does everybody else, it's still not great and far from strong. Richard Fisher, a known hawk, said more easing won't help the economy much, while the Fed president, Narayana Kochlakota of the Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, said, in a world where unemployment is as high as it is, allowing inflation to take a peak, I'm paraphrasing him, basically above 2% target could well be part of an appropriate policy, he said. You know, just to remind our listeners, there are 12 federal bank presidents based on regions in the U.S., but not all of them get to be voting members of the Federal Open Market Committee. So there's a debate on the economy and still a debate on whether QE will help. So gold and treasuries seem to show the biggest sensitivity to this debate this week, both easing in price as of late, while the broad equity indexes really are still being powered by comments out of Europe. The consensus on the street is that anything out of the ECB will carry a lot more weight than Bernanke at the next Jackson Hole meeting and over the next few weeks, while the Fed's September meeting is a wild card.
Yeah, it keeps everybody on the edge of their seats. No doubt the debate's going to continue until the Fed's meeting. And, you know, the month of August has been fairly quiet as far as investors are concerned. How about something we could look forward to in the week or weeks ahead?
Well, like I said, there's the Jackson Hole meeting. But really, for right now, Europe is the main story that investors are interested in. Peripheral bond yields have dropped, while core yields in Germany and France, in addition to U.S. Treasuries, have risen as investors leave the safety trade and invest in more risk-on investments. In fact, you know, Spain's IBEX stock market is up nearly 30% since Draghi spoke on July 26th. And I expect we'll hear about Spain relatively soon. That's still a question mark. They have about 100 billion euros, which we've already talked about to recapitalize their banks, but they say they only need 60. So they're asking to use the other 40 to buy their sovereign bonds and help maybe lower their yields without having to ask for additional help. But additionally, Rajoy has been very coy about seeking bailout help from the bailout funds. Vice versa, the ECB in Europe has said they won't aid in sovereign bond markets until they officially get asked and terms are accepted with EU officials. And we'll find out more in the next couple of weeks. But up ahead is the Jackson Hole meeting. Like I said, Bernanke will talk on Friday the 31st, while Mario Draghi speaks on Saturday the 1st of September. Monday, our markets are closed on the 3rd. So I do expect things to be relatively quiet until then. But really, I think the market's going to come back pretty fierce with the news. The EU finance ministers will meet to discuss, again, Spain and Greece that Monday while our markets are closed. So expect some catch up on Tuesday to the European markets in the U.S. We tend to get headlines. The market is very sensitive near those types of meetings. So, you know, that'll be something that we'll definitely be looking at on that Tuesday, the 4th. Additionally, we'll get Europe and China's manufacturing data, which for August is released also on Tuesday, the 4th. We'll get U.S. data as well. That Thursday, the ECB meets to set policy, and Friday we'll get another jobs report. Jobs report was the last major move in our market on that Friday a couple weeks ago. So basically, vacation all you want, but the markets will be getting back to work after Labor Day.
Yeah, and Congress is at a session too, so
5 weeks. They got to raise money.
Everybody can breathe a giant sigh of relief. So if we follow the old adage, sell in May, stay away until Labor Day, or go away until Labor Day, whatever you recite it as, I guess if you did that, you really didn't miss much this summer, did you?
It really didn't. The S&P is roughly at the same level. But if you sure want to tune in the end of this month and that week in September, because we'll have some major events to discuss. But until then, let's see what the markets have for us next week. There's always something of interest in the Weekly Drivers Report.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com.
Wasn't going to happen overnight. We knew it was going to take more than one term, maybe even one president, to get this country back to the place where everybody's got a fair shot. But we started. And 3.5 years ago, we saved ourselves from going into a Great Depression, and 4.5 million jobs have been created, and 500,000 manufacturing jobs, and the auto industry got saved, and we are now... We're now at a point where a lot of folks are still struggling, and so we've got to move forward and not backwards. We've got to move forward. Now, the good news is we've got everything we need to succeed. We've still got the best workers in the world. We've still got the best universities and colleges in the world. We've got the best researchers and scientists in the world. We've got the best entrepreneurs, small businessmen and women, and large businesses that are the best in the world, making some of the best products. We've got everything that we need.
Joining me on the program is Tom McClellan from the McClellan Market Report. And Tom, let's get right to it and talk about the stock market. We had a little nasty plunge in the month of May, but just when you least expected it, we had one of the best Junes on record. So let's begin with the S&P, and where do you see it going?
I see the market stalling here in the month of August a little bit more. It's not quite organized to have a big uptrend yet, but it should get organized at a bottom that's due around August 21st to 23rd. From that bottom, we should go up in a meaningful way during September and October, topping around the election time. And I say that irrespective of who wins the election. The expectation comes from looking at how money flows into and out of euro-dollar futures. Your listeners may be unfamiliar with that term. A euro-dollar is an interest rate product, not a currency product. And we follow the net position of the commercial traders of euro-dollar futures as listed in the weekly Commitment of Traders report. And we find that that gives us about a one-year leading indication for what the stock market's going to do. It's a really great tool.
What do you think explains that in terms of its correlation with what happens to the stock market?
Well, it's all about what I call the real fundamentals that matter for the overall stock market. When you're looking at an individual stock, you want to know about the earnings and the dividend yield and the book value and all the other stuff. But those don't matter for the overall stock market. There are really only two fundamental factors that drive the overall stock market. And those are, first, how much money is there? And second, how much does that money want to be invested? If you change either of those, you move the level of the stock market. Well, the euro-dollar futures that are held by the commercials, which are the big, ginormous banks, those tell us about what the fund flows are going to be into the stock market. Now, why it's a year later, I have no idea. I just know that it has been working well for years, and I follow it, and I don't really need to understand when I turn on the light switch in a room exactly what the nature of the electricity is that's making that happen. I just know that up means the light's on and down means the light's off. It's the same way with certain indicators for the stock market. As long as you understand how they work, you don't need to understand why they work.
You know, I come at the market from a fundamental point of view, but, you know, I do look at charts. Tom, what do you think would be the catalyst going forward in September and October? I noticed just from an economic point of view, the leading economic indicators are starting to loop back up again. Even though on the day you and I are speaking, the Philly Fed came out, it was negative, but it was improving. At least it's turning around. Do you see any catalyst other than the Commitment of Traders report on euro futures? Is that telling you that's why the money wants to be invested?
Well, the money is going to be made available to be invested. It's going to come out of wherever it's locked up somewhere else and be made available to push stock prices higher. There's also the possibility, as we come into this election, that a lot of people who are wanting to see a Republican victory will become more optimistic as they see the poll numbers shift that way. You know, if that happens, that's one of the possibilities. Investors, as a group, tend to believe that a Republican president is better for the stock market, and so they behave that way based on that belief when they are investing into and out of the stock market. Typically, when you have a Republican win a presidential election, there's great celebration in November and December, and then when inauguration day comes in January, they realize that he hasn't already fixed everything and that we still have all these problems, and then they get depressed. So you can see sort of a self-fulfilling positive reaction based on this belief that everyone has that Republicans are better. If we do see a Republican victory in November, you will see probably not that much reaction at all if President Obama wins re-election, because investors will think that they already know what that's about and it'll already be discounted.
Let's talk about another market that has spiked recently, and that's the Treasury market. We had those lows that we got into the middle of July where we got Treasury yields down below 1.4% on the day you and I are speaking, which is a Thursday. Treasury yields are back to 1.83. What's your take on the bond market?
Well, 1.83% is better than 1.4%, but it's still a ridiculously low yield to get for locking up your money for 10 years. It's a great time to be a borrower. If you're looking to borrow money to fund your business or to build a house or anything, it's a great time because the price of money is really cheap right now. Generally speaking, it's not going to stay cheap. There is an important 60-year cycle in long-term interest rates, and I'm talking about long-term treasuries or corporate bonds, and it was due to reach a peak in prices or a bottom in yields in 2010. We're pushing it a little bit late, but it's a 60-year cycle, so a couple of years late doesn't really affect things. Between now and about 2040, we should expect to see generally rising interest rates. just like we saw generally rising interest rates from 1950 to 1980. It's this important 60-year cycle that goes all the way back to the 1700s. You can track it if you have enough of the historical data.
Finally, I want to talk about the gold market, Tom, because as we look at the gold market, we had those nice peaks that we saw last year in gold in September, likewise with silver in April of last year. The stocks have done horribly over the last couple of years, but it seems like we've been in this very, very narrow trading range from the low 1600s to the low 1500s, and we've been sort of stuck there for quite some time. What's your take on gold?
From a chart perspective, gold has been making a series of what chartists call triangle structures, where you basically have sideways movement but decreasing amplitude. Each peak is lower and each bottom is higher, and so it just narrows down. Those are indecision patterns. Whenever you see a triangle, the market is undecided. And when it's a sideways indecision pattern, the usual outcome is that you get a resumption of the trend that preceded the indecision pattern. In this case, that would be a resumption of the downward trend. But they can sometimes be reversal patterns, and that's what I'm expecting this time. The number one fundamental factor that affects gold prices is whatever real interest rates are doing. And we still have the interest rate on short-term paper below the inflation rate, and that tends to be a bullish factor for gold in the long run. The Fed doesn't look like it has any intention of changing that anytime soon, and so that positive factor for gold should persist until the Fed wakes up and realizes that it should do its job and not inflate the money supply at 10% per year and not allow 2% inflation, which they say is their goal. Their mandate is price stability, and in my mind, slicing 2% off of the value of the dollar every year, that's not stability.
Tom, what does this imply about this rally that you see going into the November elections? Let's say if gold breaks out, which probably would indicate the dollar breaking down, would that imply, if you were going to play this, that the risk on trade comes back on?
I would look at them separately, but I would arrive at that conclusion. Gold and the stock market are not very well correlated. And let me define what I mean when I say that. Sometimes the two of them will move together, but the moment that you expect them to continue doing that is when it'll turn fickle on you and go in a different direction. Sometimes they move together, sometimes they move in opposition. You just can never count on the correlation to behave in one way or the other. It's a very fickle relationship. So I wouldn't say anything about gold to therefore mean anything about the stock market. I would urge people to look at them independently just because it becomes unreliable to look at them together.
But if you do expect that stocks begin to turn around by the end of this month and we have a nice upward move in the S&P, on the day that you and I are speaking, the S&P is up nearly 8 points. This is a Thursday at 14.13. What kind of numbers would you expect? And would you just simply go with the index? Or do you think there are certain sectors that are doing much better than the others in playing out this topping process that you see?
I don't have a price point in mind for where the market should top out. That top is due around the time of the election. And I generally try to stay away from price targets because a lot can happen that's not yet baked in. The direction, though, and the timing of the turning points, that's pretty well decided in advance. So I try to get the direction right and let the how far take care of itself. Generally speaking, it should be a very strong rally in September and October, one that anybody would want to catch. And by the time we get to November, I think everyone will be supremely confident, overly so, in the stock market in such a way that you typically see overconfidence at an important top. Next year looks to be an ugly year as money comes out of the stock market and goes to work doing something else.
All right. Well, listen, Tom, if our listeners would like to find out more about the work that you do, I'm going to give out your website if I could. It's MC Oscillator. That's OSCILLATOR. That's MCOscillator.com. And Tom, tell them what they're going to find at your website and the services that you provide.
Well, the web address is a contraction of the name of the McClellan Oscillator, which is an indicator that my parents developed back in 1969. I still work with my father, Sherman McClellan. My mom passed away a few years ago, and we write twice monthly stock market newsletter, the McClellan Market Report. We also write a daily edition, and people are not ready to subscribe for real. They can sign up for our free weekly chart and focus email. No strings attached. You can just get to see an interesting article about an interesting indicator once a week. It varies every week. And you can also look at the free section of our website, and there's a lot of articles posted. They can learn about breadth indicators and price indicators and the things that we like to use, the tools that are in our toolbox. Lots of information there.
All right. The website is MC Oscillator, OSCILLATOR, MCOscillator.com. We've been speaking with Tom McClellan. Tom, thanks for coming on the program. Great speaking with you.
It's been a pleasure, Jim.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com.
Over the past 4 years, America has doubled the amount of electricity that is produced from wind. And this is enough to power 13 million homes with clean and renewable energy. Think about that. It's the equivalent of 12 Hoover dams worth of electricity is being generated by wind power in this country. That's something that's worth investing in. That's something we're doing for the next generation. And so are the 37,000 American jobs that are on the line if we let this wind tax credit expire.
You know, Jim, I've been looking around for Rob Bernard, but he's not here to do his segment of the show. As a matter of fact, ever since we started talking about doing these behind the curtain series, talking about hidden agendas, I can't find him anymore.
We haven't seen him either.
Yeah, I know. What are we going to do? We got to do his segment.
Oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to fill in. So here it goes. Let's begin with what happened with interest rates around the globe. Pretty much a flat week in the bond markets when you look at Europe and Asia. The only action in the bond markets was here in the U.S., where we've seen the sharpest backup in yields, not only in U.S., Canada, but also we saw a backup in yields in Brazil and Colombia. So it was mainly a North American story. What is kind of interesting in terms of looking at sovereign bond yields, they've been all over the place. I mean, right now, if you look at U.S. Treasury yields, they ended on Friday at 1.81. They got as low as 1.38. That was only a couple weeks ago. So we're up almost a half a percentage point. And that's happened not only here, but also in Canada. Canadian bond yields are almost up 2%. They're actually 1.94. But the big story year to date, overall, we've seen sovereign bond yields come down as a flight to safety. Since the beginning of the year, Treasury yields are down about 7%. In Brazil, they've been cutting interest rates. They're down about 83% overall yield. I mean, talk about a big, big change. Also, we've seen some drop in yields in Europe despite all of the problems going on there. But I guess with Draghi saying they'll do anything, some comments coming from Merkel, that's kind of helped the sovereign bond spreads in Europe, especially in Italy and Spain. Italian yields are back down to below 6% at 5.7. We've got Spanish bond yields at 6.3. But overall, it has been sort of a flat market. And I guess the big question now with yields starting to rise in the U.S. is what will Bernanke say 2 weeks from now when the Fed has its annual conclave at Jackson Hole? Remember when he launched QE2 in August of 2010, reversing course? Now, the one thing the Fed wants is an elevated asset market, and that means stocks. And so far, it's going pretty well. We've got double-digit yields in some of the major indexes. The Dow's up about 8%. Now, we're back to the risk-on trade with everybody salivating about the prospects of either the ECB or the Fed moving on monetary policy. And I think it's going to take a movement first by the ECB. The Fed is sort of doing some backdoor easing through these repos, basically repurchasing bonds at banks, which puts liquidity back into the banks. And what do? They're going to go out and trade in the market. And so it's sort of a difficult situation for the Fed, because even though the unemployment rate has been ticking up, and the LEIs have sort of dropped beginning at the end of April, they are now starting to loop up again. And even though the U.S. isn't in a recession with economic growth at 1.5%, it isn't booming like it was in the fourth quarter when we were creating about 250,000 jobs a month. Economic growth in the fourth quarter last year was about 4%. It's dropped from 4% all the way down to 1.5%, and the unemployment rate is at 8.3. So the Fed is caught between a rock and a hard place. If they do come out with a QE, they're going to have some special justification, and they might get some political heat as we get closer to the November elections. So that's why they may be doing some backdoor QE through these repurchase agreements. And they want to keep treasury rates low. Remember, for every 1% increase in bond yields, it's going to cost the U.S. government about $160 billion in interest rate costs. One of the biggest beneficiaries of lower rates has been the government. But if the Fed does launch QE, they're probably going to look at the mortgage market because housing is doing well and they want that trend to continue. So there is talk if they do something, it may be buying mortgages and maybe with some treasuries. So they're in a predicament because if they do launch QE, last time they did that, we saw a drop in the dollar, which caused a rise in import prices. And we saw commodity prices start to rise and a rising CPI, which also drove up bond yields. So a lot of things can happen here in the next 2 weeks. We'll be watching it closely here, and we'll be reporting upon it when we come back from our August recess. The thing that we're starting to see, though, is the recent slowdown is broad. It's global. And the global economy is at risk of turning down more sharply than policy experts are looking at. The ECB is increasingly weighing its options for further monetization. The Fed is inching closer towards kicking off another round of quantitative easing. The Bank of England is exploring new creative ways to ease conditions and fiscal policy. We've seen three contractions in global growth over the last 3 years, and each surge in monetary easing after QE1 has been less, and it's lasted a shorter period of time. We've only seen about a six-month recovery versus a full-year recovery with QE1, which was launched in March of 2009. So what will happen in the months ahead if policymakers don't act? We could be in a global recession, either with the fiscal cliff here in the U.S. Europe is already in a recession, so there are a lot of things happening there. So a lot of stuff to keep your eyes on.
You know, we keep talking here on the program, Jim, about facing that fiscal cliff out there. If there is no action taken on that, given what happens after the election as we plow into 2013, what is going to happen on the muni bond front?
Let me talk about two significant developments. One is during the credit crisis, when a lot of the bond insurance companies, these were insurance companies that insured municipal bonds to get their AAA rating, a lot of these bond insurers lost their AAA status, so there hasn't been much market. But there's a key development that's happened over the last couple of years. There is a company called Build America Mutual Assurance Company. It's a new firm to insure local government bonds and probably the first firm since Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway entered the market in 2007. Now, according to Build America, they could save taxpayers 0.1% on interest expenses in the $3.7 trillion muni market. The face value of insured bonds was 4% of the muni market as of Thursday. And John, that is down about 54% from the same period in 2005. So as a lot of these bond insurers lost their credit ratings, they backed out of the bond market. And the decline was spurred by the 18-month recession that started in December 2007 that resulted in many of these agencies losing their ratings. Now, Build America, which is based in New York, is, here's what makes it unique. It's owned by municipalities. They are buying insurance. They will focus, and this is good news for investors, on smaller offerings that are expected to average somewhere in the $25 million bond market. The U.S. economy, they're entering the market because they're more positive as the U.S. economy rebounds from recession. Bond insurance is now on a path of reemergence. Build America has a rating of AA. That's two levels below the top grade and the highest of any of the competitors. Insured bonds might rise to as much as 30% of the new issue market as more municipalities are joining issuers from Illinois to New York that have already saved money by getting their debt insured. A good example was an Illinois general obligation bond that came out this week that saved almost 0.25% by having the insurance. The savings from these insurance added to the cover of the bond issue is also helping to drive down municipal bond yields, which is another story I'll get to shortly. But the yields on local government securities rated AAA maturing in 10 years fell to 1.96%. So, you know, we've been talking with Rob on the program. As we get closer to the fiscal cliff and face higher tax rates, the possibility makes municipal bonds probably the only game in town. Now, another development that we're watching rather closely is firefighters in San Bernardino, California, have asked the judge overseeing the city's bankruptcy for more time to decide whether they're going to fight the decision by elected officials. Should the union, one of the city's most powerful, challenge the bankrupt decision, it could drag out the bankruptcy literally for months. The San Bernardino Professional Firefighters Local 891 said in court papers filed on Wednesday night that it opposes the city's request to force creditors to decide rather quickly whether they're going to try to block the case by challenging it in court. Now, why a lot of this is important is, for example, we take a look at City of Vallejo, California, filed bankruptcy in 2008. Three city unions spent months trying to get the case thrown out. It causes a big delay. Now, creditors feel they have no choice, even if they think they'll lose the fight, because once a judge rules that a city's bankruptcy was properly filed, the city gains the power to try to cancel contracts like union agreements and leases that are tied to bond financing. So that's one to keep your eyes on. And an update in terms of what's happened to municipal bond yields this week, the yield ratio declined to 100%. Now, what I mean by that is municipal securities still remain cheap relative to U.S. Treasury debt, even with investors directing the cash. A lot of money has been pouring into the bond market, as you know. We've been documenting that on the show, but especially since 2009. What happened this week is the yield on tax exempts fell to the same level as U.S. Treasury bonds, meaning that if you look at a 10-year Treasury at 1.81, you're getting equivalent yields in the tax-free bond market. That ratio is dropped to 100%. As of June 1st of this year, just going back roughly about 2.5 months ago, that ratio was 126%. It's now down to 100% compared to its historical yield of roughly about 93%.
Well, anything that you found interesting in the whole week here, because I would imagine that with the yields falling and taxes going up, this would be a good time for municipal investments.
Pretty busy week. Some of the big issues were Dallas-Fort Worth. They came out with a $296 million issue, and Michigan Finance Authority had a $130 million issue with yields of 3.37 and 3%. So still very close and above. Let's put it this way. That's above what you could get in a 30-year Treasury bond. The other issues, there was quite a few issues in California with yields hovering around 3%. We had a Clifton higher education bond out of Texas with a yield of 3.68 on a 10-year issue. But I would say most of the yields, John, depending on how short the maturities, whether they were 5 or 10 years, the 10-year yields are averaging close to anywhere from 3% to a little bit above that at 3.5%. But a very active week for municipal financing. And now, especially with the Build America Mutual Assurance Company coming in and insuring some of the smaller issues, we're going to see those yields drop along with demand going into the market. But that's the way it looked like this week in the bond market.
And as always here, as Rob would say, if you want to talk about bonds or other bonds in a tax-free portfolio, call toll-free 888-486-3939, 888-486-3939. You're listening to the Financial Sense NewsHour at financialsense.com. When you hear the term fast and furious, everyone thinks of the scandal involving the U.S. government, the Justice Department, and the BATF as far as weapons being run into Mexico from the United States. But we're calling this segment Fast and Furious, and it has nothing to do with that. There seems to be some good news for the president this fall as we get close to election season. Looks like the stock market may take off. Am I engaging in delirium, or is there reason for this? So, Jim, de-deliriate me.
There is some good news. We seem to be following a very repetitive pattern that we have seen and play out in the last 3 years, 2010, 11, and 12. And that is, John, despite some forecasts, you have economists like ECRI saying that the U.S. economy is in a recession right now. You have economist Gary Schilling saying that we're in a recession. I don't buy that. Not now. And what we're starting to see, all the gauges that we follow on the economic front, the ECRI leading index, some of the other LEIs are all turning around. They bottomed, for example, including the ECRI weekly leading index bottomed on June 22nd and has been heading up ever since. And so if we take a look at that's turning around, if we look at some of the indicators that came out this week, one of the big ones was the Philly Fed Index. Now, it was negative at a negative 7.1, but it's been improving. It hit a bottom right around the same time that the Philly Fed Index hit a bottom around that second week in June. The Philly Fed Index bottomed, it's reported the middle of each month on the 12th. It bottomed on June at a negative 16.6, and it was reported on Thursday, a negative 7.1. So we're heading back up again, very similar, and we're seeing this across all of the key economic gauges that we follow. And John, it's amazing. Now, we may still get a little bit of chop here in the market, but, you know, since hitting that bottom on June 4th, where the S&P got down to a close at 1278, here we are at 1415. And so we're breaking out of a level that we've seen, you know, whether it's the LEIs, I think it'll have more to do with what we see happen economically. And remember, lower inflation rates, lower gasoline prices, loose monetary policy around the globe, central banks are not tightening. These are the factors that could create another surge heading into this fall. Now, what happens when we get to the beginning of next year? We could see a repetitive pattern as we've seen this year, maybe even worse if the fiscal cliff issue is not addressed. But if you take a look at, for example, we're doing part of the big picture here on Thursday. But if you take a look at the indexes that are performing on the day, the S&P was up close to 10 points, up nearly three quarters of a point. We're starting to see materials, energy, and industrials start to break out as more of what we call late stage cyclicals are starting to break out now. So there's less performance in what we call the defensive sectors like utility stocks, sectors like, let's say, healthcare, consumer staples. Those sectors were actually down on Thursday, and the top performing sector for the day was technology, materials, energy, and industrials and consumer discretionary. And so, John, if this repeats a pattern very, very similar to what we saw happen in the last 3 years, and I don't even think the Fed has to say QE. All they have to do is continue their repo program, which is putting money into the large banks. That's going to move that money into the markets. And just as our technician in the first hour, Tom McClellan, talked about the euro-yen rate and where that's heading, that is also very favorable, and that's saying there's a lot of money that is going to be moving into the market, and especially as you get closer to the end of the year. And also, if it looks like the Romney-Ryan ticket starts to pick up, it would create a lot more stability for the market, and we could see the markets react favorably to that. But I guess maybe the good news here I would have for the president is the LEIs are turning up and the market is turning up. You wouldn't know that if you talk to investment strategists because they are underinvested right now. And also, there's still a lot of negative sentiment by investors.
You know, we've seen this pattern before. Stock market is up double digits this year. The Dow's up 8%. But why all of this negative sentiment? How long does it take to break what happened before that people say, well, we've moved on now?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons. And I think one of them is the corrections throughout the year. I mean, the stock market is up. If I go back to where it was, we take a look at where we ended last year, which was at 1257. We had a nice run up to roughly the end of February. Then we had a nice big drop heading into March. We went right back up again, dropped right back down in April, went up, hit almost a new high in May. People were calling it a double top. And then from May, where we hit 1397, roughly about 1400, we went from 1400 all the way down to, let's say, June 4th, when the S&P got down to 1278. So that was quite a correction. So we've had, just looking at the chart here, one, two, three corrections and a couple along the way. And so the corrections have been more frequent. The size of the correction in the past, if you got a 3 to 5% correction, it was considered normal. Now I would say a 5 to 10% correction is normal. So, John, more frequent corrections, the size of the corrections are a little larger, and so it makes people much more apprehensive. And then on top of that, as all bull markets climb a wall of worry, I mean, you never know what the market's going to focus on from a negative perspective. It could be housing, it could be jobs, it could be Europe, China, it could be yields, it could be oil prices, it could be the Middle East. Certainly, all of those have been in the headlines and been a major concern throughout the year. But the simple fact is, the Dow's up 8%, and the S&P is up close to 12%, one of the best years that we've seen in the market. And I think with the LEIs looping up, I think with the number of stimulus that's already in the pipelines, and remember, interest rates are still at zero, central banks are loosening, the housing market is improving, credit is moving out the door, and with central banks all now in a loosening mode versus this time last year, they were in a tightening mode, I don't think that Bernanke really has to do much. All he has to do is just say a few right words. In other words, use the open mouth committee versus, let's say, the actual open market committee. And I think this market could take off in ways that is going to surprise a lot of investors. And nothing gets the juices going in terms of a big rally in stocks, because investors or Wall Street strategists have an allocation of a little over 40% in equities. You take a look at bonds getting hammered right now. Equities up high single digits or double digits, and I think there's going to be a mad dash scramble to get invested if this trend continues, which I think it will, because that's what our key economic indicators and money flow indicators are telling us right now.
Well, you know, Jim, given what you've just said here, you've also been discussing over the last few weeks on the program dividend investing. So what do you do now? Do you abandon dividend stocks, flip out of them, go into high beta type issues, things that maybe have a little higher risk?
You know, if you're a trader, John, I mean, that's where you're going to get a little bit more performance going into the, let's say, this next rally. And that's certainly what we're seeing happen in the market with material, energy, and industrial stocks taking off. But if you own good dividend paying stocks, you have to think once again, why did I buy these stocks? I bought them, number one, for the dividend yield. Number two, I bought them for the dividend increases. So you hold on to those stocks. But if you're putting new money to work right now, and you're just going for what this next rally is going to, how it's going to play out, then I'd go in late stage cyclicals like the industrials, material, and energy stocks, which are now starting to break out. But, you know, if you bought dividend stocks, you hold on to them. And if they weaken here, you might get a chance to pick up additional dividend paying stocks. But you don't change that strategy, even though the market is going through what I call a sector rotation right now. But if you're a trader, that's how I would play it. If you're looking for extra performance, I certainly think that the energy stocks and the gold stocks have been beaten up so much, they're selling well below their intrinsic value. Energy stocks are selling below their value in terms of the commodity of oil. Likewise with the gold stocks. And I think the energy stocks and the gold stocks are going to be some of the top performing sectors. That's where I'd really deploy some cash if you're looking for super returns here in this next burst of what we think will happen to stocks in the September, October, November timeframe.
Now, there's much more to come on the Financial Sense News Hour this weekend. This week on the premium series of the show, during midweek, we interviewed David Walker, who is former Comptroller General of the United States under both Presidents Clinton and Bush II. One thing that the nomination of Paul Ryan as a vice presidential candidate for the Republicans has done has been to bring the economy and the fiscal cliff issues somewhat back into the mainstream limelight, which so far has been avoided. Right now, we have several plans out there. There's a Simpson-Bowles plan. There's a Ryan plan. There are several others, but will the presidential debate and will Congress start to take this to heart? Because we have to do something to avoid the fiscal cliff. And a key to this would be restoring fiscal sanity. And then Jim goes on the record where we respond to emails we have received over the last month. This is a monthly series, and we'll take some of your calls on the Q lines at financialsense.com.
We've got heart, miles and miles and miles of heart. Oh, it's fine to be a genius, of course. keep that old horse before the cart.
So what the heck's the use of crying?
Why should we curse?
We gotta get better, cause we can't get worse.
And to add to it, we've got horse.